Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Welcome to another installment of Growing the Game with Ballsy. Please make sure to share this with your friends and others in the football community, as it's a good way to promote our own athletes, coaches, and builders who help grow the game of football and preserve it here in Saskatchewan. Thanks to my sponsors, Face First Medical Aesthetics above Gabos on Dudney Avenue in Regina, Riviera Ag Seeds in Radville, Mark Greshner Photography, Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina, and Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, and David Dubay in the Concord Group of Companies. Now, before we get to our Where Are They Now segment, did you hear Lon Adams, who developed the recipe for Slim Jim beef jerky sticks, has died at the age of 95. According to reports, it was COVID-19 related. Let's go to our reporter for more.
Lon Adams, the man behind the Slim Jim beef jerky recipe, has passed on. In other words, he's dead meat. Cause of death, we heard that he was bit by his dog, Chewy. The service will be held at 7-Eleven. When his family found out he died, there was a big gulp. Instead of a coffin, he'll be vacuum-packed and wrapped in long, skinny plastic. Some people say he was a nice guy, but others said he was kind of a jerky. The eulogy will be given by Mr. Pibb, who said he always had a beef. Reporting on the funeral for the man behind the Slim Jim recipe, I'm Howie Chewed-A-Lot.
Time now for the Where Are They Now segment, brought to you by our friend Corey Zadarozniak and Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. For grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance, give Corey a call out there in Weyburn at Double Z Ag Sales. We're going to talk to Christine Stapleton now. She was the head coach of the U of R Lady Cougars basketball team when they won the national championship back in 2001. A very accomplished coach, went on to the national scene, was at Waterloo in administrative, was the athletic director at the U of C, and now the director of sports and recreation at Western University in London, Ontario. Been a long time since I talked to you. What's new?
Yeah, well, geez, like, what's new? What a crazy time we're in, right? Like,
Wow.
But no, things are good. Can't believe how long ago. It seems like yesterday, right, that I was in Saskatchewan. But yeah, no, things are good here in London and close to my family, and it's been a busy but a good time here.
It's been quite a journey for you, out west and now back east, closer to home. That's got to be a good thing, especially with the shit we're going through right now.
Yeah, this is very, very challenging times, right? Like, I have been in high performance university sport for 30 years, and I've never experienced anything quite like this, and the impact that it's had on the student athletes, on the coaches, on the business of sport. So, yeah, it's nice to be close here to family and friends, even though I can't see them very often. But it seems like yesterday I was in Saskatchewan. Just loved it there.
So when I say the U of R, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Oh, U of R, warm memories and great memories and great people.
Yeah, that's good. That's awesome. What about Regina? What did you think of Saskatchewan, Regina, when you got here?
I thought my favorite part of Saskatchewan is how all in they are, for my case, for sport, right? Mm-hmm. So whether I was coaching with Basketball Saskatchewan or whether I was going to a Rider game or coaching the women that I coached at the University of Regina, I just really appreciated Regina and the fans there and the people there and how they support their sports. It's awesome there in the way they rally around their team.
As it relates to the ladies' basketball team, is there one moment, one game that if you could go back in time? Yesterday was National Pretend Time Traveler Day. I know there's a day for everything, but you know, if you could go back in time and do it all over again, is there one moment or one play or one game from your U of R time that you would like to relive?
Well, obviously, winning the national championship was fantastic. You know, there was a group of us that were there to win that game in that moment of time. But listen, there was women coaches. There was a lot of people. So, you know, I'll go back in time to that game. But another moment I would go back in time is Heather Dedman hitting a game-winning shot against the University of Manitoba. I can still picture where she was on the baseline in that little gym before they built the big gym at the University of Regina. The place was packed, you know, chairs lining the sidelines and three deep on the baseline, and people's toes were on the court almost. and Heather got the ball with like just seconds left in the game and just nailed about a 12-footer on the far side baseline, and that was just a moment. So, yeah, as much as it was great, obviously loved winning that national championship, mm-hmm. I loved that shot. And that was just one shot. There was many shots in that gym with, you know, I think our capacity was maybe 900. I'm sure we packed in at about 1,000. But, yeah, those games on those cold, cold nights in Saskatchewan, in Regina, were awesome.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So what makes a good coach?
Well, I think, you know, obviously work ethic, integrity, like they have to be hardworking. They have to have integrity, because much of the work that a coach does is when no one's around, right? And a people person. I think some of the best coaches are those that get the best out of the people that they're working with. Mm-hmm. They have to be technical, tactical. You have to be able to, in the crunch time, be able to draw up a play or, you know, make a substitution that is can, you know, kind of has a key, can play a key factor in a game. So, and balance. Coaches, it's not all about winning games, and it's not all about the game. It's there's much in life outside of, in my case, the gym. So having a balanced approach to life is also a good way to stay in the game a long time.
Now, you're director of sports and recreation at Western University. What do you miss, though, about coaching? What's one thing you miss about coaching?
Oh, the people. There's no question. You know, the being a director, I was here for 3 years, and I was in Calgary for a couple of years, and an assistant director at Waterloo for a few years as well. And as the further along in my career I get in sport admin, the less time I get to spend with student athletes. So I definitely miss coaching, I miss the people.
Do you still hang around the kids? Do you still kind of try to weave your way in amongst all the teams? I know my son said he was sitting in a socially distanced way at the University of North Dakota yesterday, and the president of the university came in, sat down with him, said, "Hey, are you on the football team?" And my kid said, "Yeah, I am." He goes, "What's your name?" He goes, "My name's Ethan Ball." And he said, "Well, you're that safety from Canada." And he started talking, and they were talking. Do you do that kind of thing where you kind of, I know it's a little different now in the times we're in, but do you try to interweave yourself in amongst all the teams and all the athletes?
100%, and it is different times. So in regular times, I'm attending games and dropping in on practices. But even now, Michael, I come in the morning. I'm very blessed that I can commute to work on my bicycle. So I bike into work, and we're now doing all of our strength and conditioning in our indoor track, so that we can be physically distanced. And every morning, before I come up to the office, I'll pop in there and see what team's training. The ringette team was on the ice this morning, and the women's volleyball team was on the track. I spent some time with the coaches. I talked to the student athletes. And then even throughout my day, our teams are training physically distanced, as your son is. So I go down to the stadium. We don't have as much snow here as you probably have out there, so we're still able to get onto our turf. Volleyball, basketball are going on the gym. So I definitely, these are really, really tough times in my role.
Yeah.
And it's nice to get out and see the student athletes. It really brightens my day.
How concerned are you about the mental well-being of your athletes and your coaches? Because, I mean, we can try to look at the positives and everything like that, and they're trying the best they can, but they train and work hard to compete, to play in games. That's the fun of it. We can't do that, and we talk so much in the world about mental health. I just grew a real cheesy mustache for Movember, so to highlight men's health. We can't overlook that. Yes, COVID's bad, not trying to diminish it, but we got to watch there aren't worse ramifications or just as bad on the other side of this.
100% agree. So I can give you an example. We, like everywhere in Canada, basically locked down, right? Kind of March. We had to fly our men's hockey team home. Our men's hockey team here at Western had just upset the University of Saskatchewan in the first round of the hockey national championship. And we had to fly them home. So they won a hockey game Thursday night. They were on a plane by midnight Thursday. So that's how my year started, right? And then we're locked down. So we finally got our protocols and processes in place to get our student athletes back starting in August. And then, unfortunately, we got locked down again here at Western. And so that's when it really became clear to me. From September 17th to November 2nd, we had to go back online again, digital programming, virtual training. And that was crushing for our coaches and our student athletes and even my staff, like myself. It was a really challenging time. But what happened, Michael, when we got back up and running again here in November 2nd, I think the student athletes and the coaches are so deeply appreciative of sport now. I think we all appreciate or grateful for our talents and our opportunities. Only when they're taken away do you really appreciate the loss, right? So I'm very hopeful. Ontario, I think in Saskatchewan too, I've been following the numbers in Regina. They're going up. I'm really hopeful that we don't enter a lockdown again because it is really, really tough on all students. But in our case, our student athletes and our coaches, if they can't see each other and be around each other, there's no safer place than training with us. We're managing their protocols and they're physically distanced and we're clean with sanitizer as soon as the athletes leave. There's no safer place.
Yeah.
So this is the place where they need to be, and it was a really, really tough time here in the fall.
Christine, what is the business side going to look like? We lost programs before COVID where they couldn't make budget. I think of the wrestling team here in Regina, inexplicably cut. And there's other tough decisions that have had to be made. Are you concerned about programs across all sports, whether it be, this is a football podcast, but whether it's football, whether it's volleyball, whether it's basketball, hockey, are you concerned about the business side of things? And, even you look at it, some teams, the Rams, when Frank was the coach, this roster of about 70, they've kind of ballooned to 100 now, trying to help with their depth. But then if scholarship dollars dry up and sponsorship dries up, you're looking at a lot of kids that won't have scholarship dollars. And then you could be looking at programs that maybe don't even exist.
Well, Michael, you're absolutely right. And I think it is very challenging times. So we can't waste this crisis. We have to really analyze how we can do sport differently, I think specifically in the next 3 years, and maybe realign our conferences, maybe re-examine our rosters. We have to really start to understand where we're putting our scholarship dollars. This is a chance for us to re-examine university sport in Canada. And I think we have to kind of crawl out from this crisis with some, for sure, some schedule realignment. We just can't travel the way we used to because, number one, it may not be safe for another year or so, and number two, we can't afford it. But there could be, and I think it's very regional in the way governments, the provincial governments are managing this crisis. So I think there could be some unfortunate byproducts of the COVID, especially in Canadian university sport, that there may have to be cutbacks. And that's what we're examining right now. I think we get through this year, but I think it's the year after that's even going to be equally challenging because of the way we need to get back up on our feet. So, yeah, I know you know, I think about football and there's been savings though. I just talked to Greg Marshall, is a wonderful, national championship coach here. We had a meeting last week, and he saved close to $50,000 in recruiting.
I was going to say, recruiting, you could get away now. I mean, it's not as good as having the eyeball test on the guy and sitting across the table from him and his family, but you could save money by doing it Zoom-wise and with the huddle programs they have for videos and things like that.
100%. And so that's what I'm talking about. So, you know, in 8 months from now, it's going to be safe to travel again. But is there a way that we can control costs for one more year? So we're all in, okay, everybody, Canadian university sport, let's limit our travel, let's continue to do our recruiting online, save the dollars that way. The challenge we have, though, is we're not competing only with Canadian university sports. Your son is a good example, because we're going into a gunfight with a knife, right? So yeah. We have to be prepared to keep the best and brightest. That's the other piece, interestingly enough, in our recruiting, especially in football and men's basketball, is student-athletes, top guys that would have went south are staying. Now, your son went south, and everyone makes their own decision, but for those two programs here at Western, Greg Marshall was telling me that he's had probably 7 or 8 guys that had intended to go on a scholarship to the United States that chose to stay in Canada for a variety of reasons. But so there's some benefit to this crisis.
It's very close, though. It's very close, Christine. Sorry for cutting you off, though. My son did go coast to coast on some of his, he went to Queens. He went to a bunch of places. We were really impressed with Guelph. With Ryan Shahan, they have really good facilities. And just listening to you talk, you've got great facilities there at Western, a preeminent school. So I think Canada, in some locations, are closing the gap in terms of competition and keeping the best and brightest. I guess from our standpoint, my son chose it just because it was closer to home. Put it to you this way. He had signed with Calgary, your old stomping grounds there. He was going to the Dinos. It's 8 hours away. But then he got an offer to go to Grand Forks, which is 8 hours away. And I thought, okay, it's perceived. I don't know if it is, but it's perceived that it's better for him if he wants to play pro football to go down there. That's the perception. I'm not saying it. You know me. I support Canadian university sports. So we thought, okay, if it's only 8 hours, it's 8 hours. I'll send him down there. He got a really good scholarship, and down there a scholarship is a little more, it has a little more impact than it does up here. You can only do so much up here, and I'm not suggesting cheating, but when they pay 80% scholarship down there, they're paying board, they're paying rent, they're paying food, they're paying all that stuff. In Canada, you don't got that. So there's some things, like you said, you can't compete with. But here's my thing. This is what really makes me scratch my head. Little old Grand Forks, my son doesn't have to practice or play outside again at home. Like, he's got an indoor practice facility and he's got a dome stadium there, albeit 15,000. Okay. And this isn't about my kid, but where I'm going with this is that's a little old city, like, you know, Grand Forks in North Dakota, not that far away. How do we make sports more popular here in Canada at the university level? And is there an appetite for that? I know maybe that's not the case. Cause I mean, Chris Moore said, I'm not really, we're concerned about the student-athlete more in Canada, Do you feel that? Do you think that's the right approach? Because I think we need to promote our own kids. That's why I do a podcast like this.
Yeah, no, it's really great to talk local, right? And I think it's there's pockets. There's pockets of in Canada where the university sports teams are driving major business and spectators, but it's few and far between. So, like, when I was in Saskatchewan at the University of Regina, we were selling out in that little gym, right?
Right.
For a number of years. So there was women at the time that could have went south, but chose to stay for that experience. I also believe that there's some student athletes that are going to go south just because they want that experience. It sounds like your son. Now, obviously, there's a scholarship involved, but he also wanted, you know, that the that football experience at a university in the United States. So
Yeah.
I think for Canadian sports, that's again, I go to, this is the opportunity that COVID's going to create for us, is a chance to take a look at our scheduling. You know, unfortunately, we're not on TV. But what COVID has done is it's forced a lot of our business to go digital. So how can we capitalize now on the infrastructure that we've created around our digital programming and try to get more eyes on our product? And I think there's more to be told of the stories of our student athletes. You know, we talk, yeah, we're going to get a university degree, a Canadian university degree, and we do put a heavy emphasis on the student first. But there's some incredible stories that we have on our campuses. And I think we need to do a better job of marketing our own people.
Yes, I 100% agree. And that's what that's what frustrates me. This is what also frustrates me. And I don't think it's under a Christine Stapleton's directive or what I saw at Guelph or what I saw at Calgary. But, you know, I don't think every school buys into this. And I know we've got budgetary constraints, but it's like, the kids work so damn hard and the coaches work hard, but sometimes I feel, and don't take this as a shot, but sometimes I feel like administration in some parts treat it barely better than intramurals. And if I'm a parent and my kid's busting his ass and I'm paying for extra training, then you better put some skin in the game too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's how I feel.
Yeah. And that's valid. Right. And I think of my own shop here. We've had significant cuts. So, as I said, it's been a tough fall.
Yeah.
And we've had significant cuts in our staffing model. And I've chose to not make a cut in the coaching staffing. So, because I think that fundamentally the most important thing is to have the best coach possible in front of and leading our student athletes. But on the flip side of that, I've taken a hit on my marketing, my sponsorship, my ticketing.
Yeah.
So it really does become, unfortunately, a resource issue. Now, on the other side of COVID, we're going to do is we're going to redesign our whole shop, right? I've only been here 3 years, so this gives me a chance now to come out the other side of COVID with a brand new plan on our sponsorship, marketing, ticketing, community engagement, all of those pieces that are important, as you say, to get the story of our student athletes out there. But it takes time, and I don't know about the University of Regina. I know here, you know, we've had a significant cutback specifically on the sports side of our business. But yeah, it does come now down to resources, especially in the next few 18 months or so.
Last question for you, Christine. You're doing a great job. You have a bright mind. You've been around and been successful, not only on the playing surface, but also upstairs in the boardroom. But you see, Kim Ng hired as the Miami Marlins general manager, first ever female in Major League Baseball. How do you feel as somebody in a prominent role doing what you're doing when you see somebody like that? And has it gotten easier for women in the boardroom? Like, do you feel like you're respected like your male peers?
Yeah, you know what? I'm so super proud to see and super happy to see that, because you know you can't be what you cannot see. So I'm really excited to see that type of leadership at a professional level for a woman. You know, in Canada, we're very it's a great place to work. I think there's a lot of respect for women. There's Lisa at the University of Regina is the athletic director there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of women in the role that I'm in across Canada. So, I'm very grateful, very proud to be doing what I do and continuing to still have that impact on students and coaches. Well, now I'm here in London.
Tell you what, it's hard to believe I haven't talked to you probably in almost 15, 16 years, but it's fun. You age like a fine wine. You're awesome. Thanks for taking time. It was great. It was great catching up with you.
Okay, take care. All the best.
Time now for the pick six for SaskSelects Football, building the gridiron stars of tomorrow today. These are six big stories that I kind of handpicked from week 13 in the NFL. Number one, how about the New York Football Giants? They've won four in a row, five of their last seven games. They won Sunday with Colt McCoy as the quarterback and beat up those big phonies, the Seahawks in Seattle. Don't look now, but that could be a first-round matchup at the Meadowlands come the playoffs. And the Seahawks, well, I don't care what anybody says. They're not winning anything this year. Number two on Ballsy's pick six from week 13 in the NFL. The Chargers have the worst special teams in the history of football anywhere, any league. In a 45-0 loss to visiting New England, they gave up a punt return TD, a blocked field goal return for a TD in the final play of the first half. Their kicker missed a field goal again. By the way, how doesn't former Ryder kicker Brett Lowther have a job in the NFL, or at least a tryout? Come on. Anyway, this is how pathetic the Chargers' not-so-special teams are. The Patriots lined up for five punts in this game. The Chargers had the wrong number of players in the field for three of them. They had 10 players on the field for a punt in the second quarter. They had 12 for a punt in the third quarter and were called for a penalty that gave New England a first down. Then three snaps later, the Patriots had a punt again, but this time the Chargers had 10 players on the field. They say they're going to keep their coach to the end of the year. Oh, man. Typical Chargers. Number three on Ballsy's pick six, the Brownies. Yes, the Cleveland Browns have sucked for so long that I think every NFL fan has them as their second favorite team. I know I do. Now, the Browns haven't actually clinched anything other than their first winning season in 13 years, which is pathetic enough. But they did make a rather emphatic statement by beating the Tennessee Titans on the road 41-35. Now, that score was flattering to the Titans as Cleveland led 38-7 at halftime. Baker Mayfield played out of his mind, throwing four touchdown passes in the half, mainly because he was only pressured once on 25 of his passing attempts. Number four on Ballsy's pick six, the Jets, with the worst coaching decision in a very, very, very long time. They're up 28-24 with 10 seconds left. The Raiders have zero timeouts left, so they can't stop the clock. They're at their own 46. All you do is drop your defensive backs deep, keep the ball out of the end zone in the field of play, and you win. What do? They blitz everybody, put all of their men in man-to-man coverage, and the Raiders burned them with the fastest guy on the field, Henry Ruggs, running straight down the field, wide open to snag a high-arcing bomb from Derek Carr for a 31-28 win. Now, it was so bad, I thought for sure it was a tank job. Although head coach Adam Gase and DC Greg Williams don't benefit from throwing the game because, well, they're getting fired. As it turns out, Williams was punted on Monday. Gase is next to go, so the first overall pick is meaningless to them. As my buddy Rob Vanstone of the Leader Post pointed out, if the Jets did try to throw the game, it would be picked off. Good one, Rob. Number five in Ballsy's pick six, the AFC wildcard race is getting very interesting. We talked about the Browns' big win earlier. They exit week 13 in line for the AFC's top wildcard spot and number five seed. The other clubs behind them 1-2. The Dolphins 8-4, the Colts are 8-4, and the aforementioned Raiders are 7-5. After that, it's the Ravens and the New England Patriots, one for the fourth time in five games to improve to 6-6, which puts them just two games off the pace for the last playoff spot. Number six in Ballsy's pick six, the Washington football team. They ended the Steelers' unbeaten run at 11 games. Truthfully, I don't watch many of their games, and I'm not sure, unless you're a diehard fan, who would watch their games, but that Washington team has a nasty D-line, and quarterback Alex Smith is an inspiration. Hard to believe he was like 10 minutes away from having his leg amputated after horribly breaking it 2 years ago. 17 surgeries later, he's dancing around, climbing the pocket, and pulling off an upset. The Comeback Player of the Year award should be the Alex Smith Award. That guy is unbelievable. And what a resilient team. Lots of negative press about their nickname at the start of the year. Their coach Ron Rivera battles cancer while continuing to coach. And then, of course, like I said, the Alex Smith story. The Washington football team tied with the Giants for first in the NFC least. Time now for the extra point. Now, we use the term hero too much in sports, but it definitely applies here. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif was announced as one of Sports Illustrated's 2020 Sports Persons of the Year this past Sunday. Of course, he was a stud offensive lineman with the Chiefs when they won the Super Bowl last year, but he's also a doctor. He turned down over $6 million this year and a serious crack at another Super Bowl ring to stay in Quebec and fight COVID. Before that, he was also announced as part winner of the Lou Marsh Award for Top Athlete in Canada. I don't agree with that. Give him the Order of Canada, but he's not worthy of top athlete. He's only technically played three games in 2020. Alphonso Davies, who's the second best player at his position and a soccer phenom for a team in Germany, is the Athlete of the Year. He should be the sole winner of the Lou Marsh Athlete of the Year Award here in Canada, but definitely give Duvernay-Tardif his due. Sports Illustrated did, and Canada should by giving him the Order of Canada.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.